Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming spine problems through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you are not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be speaking with Debbie Fox, a spinal champion whose journey began when she began having back and neck pain following the birth of her second child. As the pain progressed, she tried over-the-counter ibuprofen, physical therapy, massage treatments, and more. Several primary care doctors told her it was nothing to worry about and that she was probably just depressed. As her pain worsened over the years, Debbie saw a neurosurgeon who diagnosed her with scoliosis, and she was referred to yet another specialist. After many more years of more treatment, she saw yet another specialist, one who specialized in complex spine surgery. Since her surgery in November of 2021, she has had a challenging journey, but considers her surgery a success in spite of everything. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Debbie's story.
I remember first noticing the pain in my lower back when I would bend over the bathtub to give my children a bath. I kind of ignored the pain at first, treating with over-the-counter ibuprofen.
As Debbie's pain continued to progress, she tried all kinds of things, including physical therapy, massage, multiple pillows, new beds, acupuncture, yoga, muscle relaxers, and every quick fix gadget on the market.
I saw a few different primary care physicians over the years, and they didn't think it was anything to worry about. I was told I was depressed and was prescribed antidepressants and muscle relaxers.
By 2011, Debbie noticed a lump on her back and had lost some height, so she went to see a neurosurgeon who diagnosed her with scoliosis, which he did not treat.
He wanted to refer me to a specialist in Virginia, but I didn't want to travel out of state, so I sought treatment in the Atlanta area. From 2011 to 2020, I tried facet injections, physical therapy, a peak scoliosis brace, and radio frequency ablation. I had difficulty and increased pain with standing and walking, but I was able to sit for extended periods of time. I was an accountant, so fortunately, it didn't interfere with my career too much at that time.
Debbie's curvature worsened from 2011 to 2021, and she subsequently lost 4 inches in height. To add insult to injury, she was also dealing with new GI symptoms.
In early 2021, I could tell that things were changing. My height was just under 5 feet. I had more difficulty standing, had horrible headaches that always started in my neck, and it was taking me a long time to do simple things like showering, doing my hair, etc. Something just didn't seem right.
Debbie's primary care doctor ordered an MRI that showed a progression from 55 degrees in 2016 to 63 degrees in 2021.
By this point, I was concerned as to what my future might look like and decided it was time to see a specialist again.
Together with her neurosurgeon and her family, Debbie made the difficult decision to proceed with surgery.
The surgery was difficult, and it wasn't without complications, challenges, and setbacks. My main goal was to stop the progression and restore some of my height, and I believe those goals were achieved.
The entire journey has taken its toll on Debbie, both physically and emotionally.
At first, my recovery was progressing very well. I was even off my pain medication sooner than my medical team expected. However, as I said, there were setbacks. I found myself unable to sit upright for long periods of time, which affected my ability to work. I also had increased pain in my upper back and neck. Thinking it would pass, I attempted to return to work and struggled greatly for 9 months before making the emotional decision to retire after 36 years.
Debbie did physical therapy for several months, but walking and time proved to be the best therapy. She was fortunate to have a strong support system, including her family and her medical team.
It has been 2 years since my surgery, and although I know I will continue to have struggles, pain, weakness, and mobility issues, I do consider my surgery a success, and given the choice, I would do it again.
Debbie, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I'm on this recording and we're looking at each other across a video screen here, and I am looking at a beautiful, vibrant, healthy, smiling, awesome person on the other side of the screen. And I have to say, from where I'm sitting, I would have no idea what you've been through at all. And, it's amazing. It's amazing. Your story is so incredible. You had such a severe and complicated case. And basically you could hardly do much of anything in terms of your daily living activities and not feeling pain. And I think that, you know, a lot of people would have given up the battle, but you persisted. And, you know, Debbie, talk to us about what your motivation was that kept you just sort of thinking something's not right. I got to get an answer to this. You know, tell us about that.
Well, the first part of that answer is really easy. I was motivated by my grandchildren. Grandchildren can be mm-hmm. a big motivator. At the time, I had 3, and now I have 5.
Oh, congratulations.
And I wanted a future where I could enjoy them. I wanted to be able to play with them. But the more in-depth answer is probably fear. I didn't know what my life would become. If the progression continued, I was having more difficulty walking, standing for periods of time. I could feel myself getting weaker and weaker. I had a couple of doctors tell me that the curvature in my spine would probably get to a certain level and then it would level off and it wouldn't progress anymore. And that I should just monitor it. But in 2021, I felt like something wasn't right. I was getting weaker. I had trouble just walking up my driveway. It has a slight incline, and my husband would be kind of pulling me up the driveway just to go to the mailbox. And I felt like I needed to get some answers.
Yeah. Debbie, when you found that bump in your back and you went to see the neurosurgeon and he told you you had scoliosis, was that completely new news to you?
It wasn't completely new news, because by then I was having physical symptoms, and I think I had people casually mention it, like maybe a chiropractor, a massage therapist, but I hadn't been diagnosed yet. I'd had my first MRIs because I started having pain in 1995 after the birth of my second child. Mm. Up until then I was fine. And, so I started having that pain. But there were no visible signs of scoliosis. And I did have an MRI
in that 1995 MRI, was it normal at that time, or were there findings?
It was fairly normal. I mean, there were things listed, but nothing that anybody was concerned about. And then I had it again in 2004. Because my symptoms were, they were subtle at first, but they continued to progress. I kept having symptoms of back pain. And so they redid the MRIs in 2004. And, the detail showed that there was some degeneration. But again, nothing that got anybody's attention. It never mentioned scoliosis. It just showed, some degeneration. And I continued on. Then in 2011, it was really becoming, my back, you could see that I was more of a hunchback. I definitely had that lump on the side of my back on the right side, and I had lost some height. I was having some GI issues. Every time I ate, I was having stomach problems. So I did reach out to a primary care doctor that our company had, and he referred me to a specialist in Atlanta, and that's about 50 miles south of where I am. So I went to Atlanta to see him. And then based on MRIs, x-rays, my symptoms, and my visual appearance at that point, he did diagnose scoliosis. He didn't treat adult scoliosis. He said it was complex, and he referred me to a specialist, one of his colleagues, I guess, in Virginia. But at that time, I didn't really want to travel out of state. I had been to many primary care doctors, not specialists, and they all were kind of dismissive. So I didn't really want to travel out of state, the cost, the time off from work, the travel, only to be told, go to physical therapy, take a muscle relaxer. You know, I decided to seek treatment locally, and I did see a specialist, and he tried facet injections, and I did like him. He wanted to monitor. He actually did ask me in 2012 if I wanted to speak to a surgeon, but he was kind of discouraging about it, you know, like maybe it wasn't time or it wasn't really. So I said, well, I'll hold off.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I think that's a common approach, is to sort of do watchful waiting, you know, and to see the progression of the disease, because as you encountered, you know, deformity surgery or complex spine surgery is, it's a big deal, right? That's not right. Something you want to jump into unless you really need it. And so, right.
And I wasn't convinced at that time.
Yeah. So what was the convincing?
Well, he was seeing me annually, and I went back to him, and I really liked him a lot. And I went back to him in 2000. So I saw him in 2011, saw him in 2012. I went back I called in 2013 to make my appointment. He had rotated out of the position to another department. And at that point, I was referred to somebody else, and he was more dismissive. He, you know, I saw him a couple times. Oh. Then he said, you know, he gave me a peak scoliosis brace, had that fitted for me, and basically told me there was really nothing they could do for me, and that I didn't even need to come annually because, you know, there was no point doing the scoliosis series. And at that point, it was at 55 degrees, I believe. That was in 2016. And then I elected to not seek any treatment. Because I was like, well, you know, this is how it's going to be. So I didn't see anybody for the next 5 years until 2021.
And at that point, you just were, activities of daily living you couldn't do, the pain, the GI symptoms. And you're like, I've got to do something for this, right? I can't go on like this.
That's right.
And so how did you educate yourself on what to do? You turn to the internet. Did you have friends to talk to? How did you get information on what to do next?
I wish I had known about your website and your organization at that point, because that would have been like really helpful to me. And so I'm not even one to do these kind of things because I'm kind of shy, but it's like, I wish I had had some place to turn or somebody to talk to, or, you know, it was hard to find somebody. It was really difficult to find information on something that complex. We'd had a new state-of-the-art hospital built, and I figured we had neurosurgeons moving in up here locally, and I wanted to see somebody closer to home. And that's when my primary care at the time referred me to a neurosurgeon here.
And are you in Atlanta, Debbie? Where are you?
I am, yes, I'm in Cherokee County. It's outside of Atlanta. I don't know if you're familiar with Alpharetta, but it's just north of Alpharetta.
Great. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for being willing to come on and share your story. I mean, to your point, that's why we're here. That's why we're doing what we're doing. It is hard to find information. It is hard to find somebody to talk to. And as you've seen on our website and getting to know our organization, you know, complex spine surgery is not rare. It's, you know, it's not a rarity. It's something that it's adult deformity. It's a condition that is treatable. You've got to find the right surgeon. You've got to put yourself in the right hands, got to go through the process. But it's not an uncommon thing. And yet it is hard to find good information and a support system and other people who've been through it who you can talk to and learn from and listen to. And that's what we're all about here, is creating a resource like that, building a community, and people like you, Debbie, who are willing to come on and share your story and be a resource for others is the heart of what we do. So I know I say thank you a lot, and I will say thank you many, many times during this interview, but thank you, and thank you for sharing that. And I appreciate that you're a shy person, and maybe our listeners should know that Debbie was super nervous to get on this podcast, but hopefully you're not as nervous now as when we started. But you know, it does take some courage to talk about your condition and to share that with the world. So I thank you for that. But knowing that it could help somebody out there is what gives us inspiration to do this, right? And I'm the same way. I had spine surgery and was looking for someone to talk to, and you know, other moms who'd been through it. And I just couldn't believe that there wasn't a resource out there like this. So I've been in your shoes too. And I share that. But I think that the deformity surgery or the scoliosis, as your life is limiting and, you know, you could feel what's happening. You see the physical changes that are happening. It gets really scary, right? I mean, let's talk about, you know, the fear and what that was like, and share with us your support system around you and how your family maybe helped you through the decision making here.
Well, when we went to the neurosurgeon in 2021, my expectations were pretty low. My husband was a lot more optimistic than I was, because he realized, you know, that spine surgery had come so far. But for me, because, you know, I had been dismissed before, my expectations were low. But like I said, I was having problems. I was getting nervous. I was kind of fearful of what was going on. My primary care doctor at the time had ordered another MRI, and it showed that had progressed to 63 degrees. So had progressed 28 degrees in 10 years. From 2011, I was at 35 degrees. Now I'm at 63 degrees, and I'm clearly struggling. So I mean, I was thinking medication. Okay, maybe now it's time for medication. Maybe he could do you know, I'd had the radio frequency ablation on my neck. Maybe he could do something on my back. So we went, and when he mentioned surgery, I was shocked. You know, I was really shocked. And he did say that it could stop the progression, but it was a brutal surgery. And when he mentioned, you know, from T5 to my pelvis, I was like, wow. I mean, it just sounded unreal to me. Then he showed me x-rays of another patient that had something similar, and who was actually older than me. And I was amazed. I couldn't believe, like, to me, how straight her spine was. And I was like, wow. I mean, you kind of almost get a little excited, because like, could that happen to me? You know, I mean, you know, it was very difficult to buy clothes. I always looked frumpy, but I was looking to stop the progression. But now all of a sudden I'm like, wow, maybe I could, you know, restore some of my height and look a little better and have clothes that actually fit. So, but the decision, you know, I talked to my family about it. They were definitely very supportive. I had many sleepless nights, you know, going back and forth between fear, excitement, wondering. I did decide ultimately that if I was going to go through something like this, this was the best time of my life for a positive, you know, outcome. I was fairly young still. I didn't have any other medical issues other than the physical deformity. So my overall health was good. I was comfortable with my surgeon. You know, he did complex surgeries. He was confident. And I did. From the time I walked in there, I finally, like, of all the doctors I had seen, I was like, okay. You know, he listened to me. He let me tell my story, and he never said a word until I was done. He wanted to hear it from me, you know, my story from my mouth in my own words. And he never said anything. He was engaged and he listened, but he never said a word until I was done. It was almost like he didn't want to distract me. He didn't want to, like, interrupt me. I talked with him about it and realized that my options were I could do nothing, and I would probably continue to decline. Or I could have the surgery, and then knowing that the risks were, you know, I could get worse, I could stay the same, and I could get better. But I felt that the odds of success were in my favor at that point. And I went back and forth between the fear and the excitement, and then ultimately decided to proceed with it.
Yeah, it's amazing. You got the education about the surgery. You learned about it, and you went to a well-trained surgeon who does exactly this kind of procedure. So that's important. And you felt comfortable with your surgeon. That's another really important factor to getting those good outcomes, because we say, this is a journey. It's not a straight path, right? So it's a little deviation here and a little deviation there. And so you're going to be in a relationship with that surgeon, and you need to really feel comfortable with the person who you are entrusting your care to. And it sounds like you hit the mark on all those fronts. So that is awesome. But you know, Debbie, so much of your story, you've indicated there were doctors who were dismissive of your complaints. A doctor who told you that you were maybe depressed and needed antidepressants and weren't really believing, in what you were saying. Contrast that to your neurosurgeon who listened to you, who listened, who believed, who took in your story and came up with a plan for you. How did it feel when those other doctors were dismissive of your symptoms? What was that like?
It was frustrating. You start questioning, you almost think, am I crazy? Am I hypochondria? I mean, clearly now you can see that I've lost height. To me, I felt like I had symptoms. But to be fair, the progression is very subtle at the beginning. I was having pain, but you couldn't really see anything.
That's true.
I mean, it was actually a seamstress like made me sign a paper when she was shortening pants, because they're like, okay, your pants are not, it's not the same length here. She said, I want you to sign this paper saying that you're agreeing that, your pants are not going to be the same length when I'm done altering them.
Wait. Hey, Debbie, that's huge. That's incredible. Are you serious? I've never even heard. That's amazing.
I had to sign like a little thing. Because I was suit. And it was an expensive suit. And she was like, okay, if I'm going to do
two different lengths
alterations, right?
Two different lengths.
Yeah. Even my hairstylist told me she could not cut my hair based on my shoulders, because my shoulders were uneven. So she had to like really watch the sides, because usually they would use people's shoulders when they were cutting your hair to make it even on both sides.
Yes, to balance.
Yeah. She said my shoulders were not even. So she had to like make sure that she didn't use that as a guide.
Oh my goodness.
But no, when I went to my surgeon, I definitely felt validated.
So yep. Yeah. And that's just, again, that's the part of your perseverance. Like, something's not right. And that's the part where we say people have got to advocate for themselves, because sometimes, doctor could miss something, right? And so it's on you to say, something's not right with me. This isn't the right answer. I don't think I'm crazy. My legs are different lengths. My hair's, can't get a straight haircut. I'm not making this up. I'm not crazy. I'm kind of depressed because I don't feel good, but it's not depression that's making me be bent over. There's something wrong here. And so pursuing that and persevering with that, Debbie, is just awesome that you did that for yourself. And that is so hard to do. It's so easy to just give up on ourselves, right? And you didn't do that. And, thank goodness you had those beautiful grandchildren that you just, wanted to get down on the floor and play with and find a way to do that. So Debbie, you've talked about your surgery having, being challenging with some complications. Can you share with us a little bit about that?
Sure. So, the degeneration in my back, it goes all the way from my neck. I have problems from my neck down, and, they had to like figure out what they were going to do for the surgery. I mean, couldn't exactly fuse me from my neck all the way to my pelvis. He said my chin would have been stuck to my chest. So I still do have issues with my upper back and my neck from, after the surgery. But, also there was a screw that put, pressure on the L5 nerve root, and it had to be removed. They had to back it back out. So that resulted in a dropped foot, which causes me weakness in my right foot. It affects the way I walk. It affects my balance, my posture, my body mechanics. I mean, it doesn't seem that it's huge, but you it throws you off, and it does affect everything.
Oh, no. It is huge. I mean, you're talking to, you know, I'm in the musculoskeletal world, so it's all about balance and symmetry. So yes, it is huge. That's right. Huge.
So, and I'm not able to walk fast, but
you can walk.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. And for that, I'm very grateful.
Right. Yeah.
Very grateful.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that oftentimes we hear our surgeon experts say, you know, we can't make you be 25 again, but we can make you the best version of 62, or I actually don't even know your age, Debbie, but we can make you the best version of the age that you're at now. And, you know, and that is going to come with maybe some, imperfections in terms of what you want to be able to do. But I think, you know, looking at where you were headed, maybe to be in a wheelchair and not able to be sitting up or walking, you know, or doing, playing with your grandchildren, you can do those things, right? So you can get back to your life. Maybe it's not perfect. Maybe it's not what it was when you were 25, but you're living the best version of where you can be right now. I think that's what's, you know, that's the real core of the message there, right? Is that we're all going to age, right? And one of our, surgeon says life is a degenerative process, right? That's just the nature of being alive. So the trick is to optimize what we can do so that we can live our best lives while we're here. And that's the goal so much of the time of these surgeries and this treatment. So when you had that complication, Debbie, did that require a second surgery to go in there and remove that screw at L4, L5?
No, they noticed it during surgery, so they backed it back out. They said, I don't need that screw there, so that screw is not there. And then I've learned over time, you know, right away coming out of surgery when I got up and started walking, I didn't know about it. I mean, they told me about it, but I didn't really know what it was. And they, you know, I remember the physical therapist telling my surgeon that I was already compensating by lifting my foot higher. So over time, it has gotten better. It's just not fully resolved. I don't know that it ever will be now after 2 years, but I do walk better. I can't walk fast, but if I do need to walk a little faster, I walk on my tiptoe because that will help me go a little faster. So you learn to compensate, you know, it's not resolved, but I can deal with it.
You can deal with it. And Debbie, are there other activities that you're better able to do now after your surgery? Would you say? I mean, you talked about your surgery being a success. So obviously, you know, daily living activities, are you cooking? Are there things that you are noticing that you are doing better now at?
Well, you know, I can walk up my driveway without my husband pulling me. I can pick up my grandchildren.
That's huge.
I can't do things for long periods of time. You know, I do have to make adjustments and I do need time to rest and recuperate. I can walk better and stand better, not for long periods of time, but better than I could before. One of the things is it is hard for sitting up straight like I am right now, doing this. So after, you know, 30 minutes or so, it really starts to push on my shoulders and my back. So that, where before I could sit for longer periods of time, but now I can kind of do all of it for shorter periods of time.
For shorter periods of time, yeah. And as you're saying that, I'm at a standing desk because I get uncomfortable and I can't sit for long periods of time and I have to get up and stand. And I think that's part of just the ongoing journey of taking care of ourselves over time. And there's an expression people are using around here saying that, sitting is the new smoking, you know, that movement is the best way to stay healthy and to build strength and to care for your spine. And it doesn't have to be fast movement, but it's just, you know, not sitting in one spot for too long. In fact, we say get up and move every 30 minutes. So your body's making you do that. We advise people, you know, to do that, to take care of their spines, get up and move. Don't hold any one position for, you know, any long period of time. Get up and move every 30 minutes, whether it's get a drink of water or take a walk around the, you know, make a lap around the house or what have you. So, you know, that's actually good for you, to get up and to move. And, you know, 2 years is not a long time for having been through what you've been through, not just in the very big operation that you had, but in the prior 10 years of a lifetime of, you know, becoming more and more turned and disabled, really. And so it just takes time to unwind that, right? That happened over a long period of time. And here it is 2 years and you're already making such great progress. So you got to just keep doing what you're doing, right?
That's right.
Debbie, are you still working with physical therapists or do you have a new exercise program that you employ?
No, I'm not working with physical therapy. I did go for 3 to 4 months. I never was a big exerciser. I'll just come right out front and say that. But just for me, it's better just doing my daily living. Like just the stuff that you normally do has really helped me, the stuff that you don't even think about. So if you're playing with a grandchild or you pick them up or stuff, just doing those kind of things, because I could feel it after.
Grocery store.
I worked out after doing that. So
yeah,
just
yeah. Going to the grocery store can be
exactly.
a workout. If you do it, you know, do it right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I guess my last question here, Debbie, just kind of along those lines, you know, you talked about in your story, making the decision to retire after 36 years and, you know, that was a really difficult decision to have to make. But at the end of the day, you would say that you are happy to have had the surgery. And despite the challenges, you would do it again. You would make this choice again. I guess, you know, let's tell our listeners about that. You know, we've just been talking about how your life has improved after the surgery and maybe just to underscore the difficulty in making that life transition and into the surgery and where you are now.
So leaving my job was incredibly difficult. I had been with the same company for 36 years. It was a great company.
Wow.
Like most people, you know, I was defined by my career. I loved my job. It was like the dream job. I worked at home. So I was able to, you know, I didn't have to like get up and get ready and get going in the morning, but it was difficult. And I started back to work. I had surgery in November. I started back to work in April. And I thought, okay, it'll be a little bit difficult at the beginning, but you know, in my mind, I kept saying 1 year, if I could just get to 1 year, I'll be brand new. Well, my surgeon helped me realize that there is really no brand new after, you know, reconstructive spine correction.
Yeah.
So I struggled and I struggled for 9 months and, you know, my husband and I had many discussions and, you know, we reached the point where, you know, after everything I had been through, I owed it to myself to, you know, give myself the best possible quality of life. And for us, that was the best decision for us, you know, and fortunately we were able to do that. It was a hard decision. I cried a lot. And it was very, very difficult, but, so I'm 58. So, you know, I left
young.
In 20.
That's young.
So it's been about 10 months now since I stopped working. Very, very difficult, but it was the right thing to do after struggling for 30 years with this, you know, with the last 10 or 15 of it being really bad. I feel like I need to take care of myself and I need to enjoy myself here. I don't want to like sit at a desk and let it get worse and worse until, you know.
Right. Right.
I didn't want to undo everything I had just done.
Exactly. Exactly. You want to give your body the best chance to fully heal and to be strengthened and to enter a new chapter in life. Debbie, I had one last question for you. Did you, have your bone health checked when you were going through this? You didn't have any issues with osteoporosis or bone osteopenia or bone mineralization problems?
So it never showed up when I was going through this with the x-rays. I did have x-rays. I think it was December of 2022, about a year ago. And it did show up that, that my bones were showing up as demineralized, which I wasn't really sure. And they recommended a DEXA scan. So I did have that. And it did say that I had some low bone depth, I guess it's called. Osteopenia.
Bone density.
So
osteopenia.
So I don't know. Right. I didn't I didn't have that before, but maybe I just didn't know about it.
Well, it's also a condition that emerges in, you know, postmenopausal women over time. So it could be something that totally unrelated to your, you know, your spine issues. It's just something new that's happening in your body. And something that we are educating people a lot about in the foundation, particularly if you've had instrumentation, you know, screws and things put into your spine, do need to think about that bone density over time, because you've got all those in place and you want them, you want the bone to hold strong. So that's something to think about as you move forward on this journey, this marathon, that the marathon, that the never ending marathon of taking care of our bodies. You know, particularly as we age, that's an area that we're doing a lot of work on in terms of educating people to think about their bone health, think about their diets to maintain good calcium levels in their body and vitamin D, which helps with calcium absorption. So, you know, thank you for sharing that and keep an eye on that osteopenia.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So there you are. So what are some of your plans going forward? What are some of the things that you're, maybe new things, that you're looking forward to doing?
I don't know. Right now, like I said, my grandchildren, they're a big part of my life. I really enjoy them. We'd like to like maybe do a nice vacation one day where we could all go and they'll have that memory as they get older. But I don't know. I'm still recovering. Yeah. I'm still taking it day by day. Yes. I'm just trying to enjoy, you know, life the way it is right now.
The gifts that you have. Yes. And the gifts that, that is wonderful. Well, like I said at the beginning, I'm looking at you on the screen and I just see, you know, young, happy, vibrant, healthy from where I can see. Your shoulders are even, like you would just have no idea what you've been through in your life. And that takes work and that takes courage. And you've done all of those things. And so Debbie, it was just so wonderful to have you on our podcast, and we cannot wait to share your incredible story with our community. I thank you so much for being with me today and for sharing so much of your journey with all of us. Truly an inspiration.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Debbie, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to mention or to say before we wrap up?
You know, I don't think so. I'll just say that I remember my surgeon, because I was impatient, and you know, I do remember him. The advice he gave me was to remember that it was a marathon and not a sprint whenever I was having setbacks. And I would advise anybody, you know, to remember that, because there are ups and downs. You know, you make progress and then you go back. And I think that anybody that's, you know, going through something like that, I think they need to remember that and to be kind to themselves and give themselves the chance to heal, because you only have one opportunity to heal. So you need to give yourself that opportunity.
Yes, that's great. Great wisdom. Debbie, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain every year. To hear more stories of spinal champion recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.